Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. Western elites are in an acute state of anxiety. In America, there is a state-sanctioned effort to destroy Trump and his followers. Europe faces mass protests and economic dislocation. When it comes to foreign policy, Western hegemony hinges on the fate of Ukraine. Overall, the outlook is bleak. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. My introduction was a bit grim, but I think it's a good reflection of what's going on right now. Really, what I want to distill by the end of this program is how domestic politics and ideology in the West is infected and bled into, quite literally, into foreign policy, where we have this postmodernist agenda is dividing countries at home and threatening world peace abroad. It's all interconnected. You can't separate the two, George.
I agree with you, Peter. We have, throughout the West, political elites that do nothing, go out of the way to do nothing to enhance the interests of their own publics. They boast about it, as we've seen with Annalena Baerbock and others. And we're on this inexorable cycle of this war in Ukraine that enjoys no public support either in Europe or in the United States, but it is absolutely fully committed to on the part of the global elites. Now, in the United States, there's an additional twist to it, which is the clear front runner on the Republican side is Donald Trump, who is the one political figure anywhere in the West who has called the Ukraine war into question. He's attacked the elites that delivered this war. He has called for an immediate ceasefire and has said exactly what needs to be said, that this war serves no other interest other than this war-making globalist elite who have been destroying our economies for years. Now, obviously, there is a powerful conspiracy afoot in the United States to stop him. And we don't know whether that will succeed or not, but it is highly instructive that there is such a conspiracy to halt the presidential run of the one man who is calling this war into question.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Martin, is that, you know, we hear this mantra, we've heard it over the last few years with great intensity about we need an inclusive society, we need equity and all this. But equity and inclusion just inherently divides very, very seriously publics across the Western world. The Global South has no interest in this agenda whatsoever. I think they just scratch their head and go, oh, there are those Westerners again doing their crazy things, because it has nothing to do, as George pointed out, with the interests of their own people. Martin.
Yeah, in the Global South or the rest of the world, as we should put it, you know, there is a distinct lack of interest and empathy towards the war, has been right from the very beginning, and cynicism as well, a great deal of cynicism. But, you know, now what we're finding is that more than 1 year on, the polls that I'm reading now are indicating that in America, something like about 50% of people polled don't believe in the Ukraine war. They don't believe that there is a genuine, sincere inertia from Biden to actually achieve whatever he's setting out to achieve. That they just don't believe in it. They've lost all confidence in it, you know. And I think, as George pointed out, you know, the Trump factor is incredibly important. You know, why is Biden so obsessed with the Ukraine war? You know, we'll find out one day. And I think one of the things is that Trump has to be stopped, because Trump represents common sense. Trump represents ending the war, you know, and turning over a new page. And there'll be a huge amount of probing going on after that process starts. And we'll actually get to the bottom of the links of Biden and the Biden family and the Ukraine war. You know, it's interesting, though, that what we're seeing in America right now, it reminds me very much of the O.J. Simpson trial. You know, I think we're going to get to a point where, you know, Biden's in the Oval Office, Biden's president, but he has no chance, no hope whatsoever of winning a media scrap online with Trump. And I think he knows this, you know, and I think it's already started now. The quips have started. Trump recently lashed out at Biden over the fiasco of the Afghanistan withdrawal. You know, I think there'll be a lot of this. But, you know, the plan, it's so political. I mean, it's just so incredibly political. I've got Democrat friends in America who just shrug their shoulders and smile when I put it to them. But, you know, this is really a political stitch-up. But I think we're heading towards a massive failure of Biden. I just can't see how he gets to the end line in this with this tactic.
Well, I mean, the more he fails, the more Trump and people like Trump, they're going to be blamed, George. I mean, that's why there's this foreign policy and ideology in the issues conflate very, very closely. Okay, so if you're against Biden's war, you're pro-Russia, but that's their, you know, very simple-minded, you know, simple binary. And everything, the more we move forward, everything becomes a binary. If you're not with us, you're against us. I thought we got over that sophomoric thinking with the Iraq war, but we haven't, George.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And, you know, when you examine the sorry trajectory of Biden's recent career, we're not even going to go back to all his belligerence, that he was a neocon in the 1980s, that he was an ardent bomber of Yugoslavia in the 90s. But just recent times, he was an enthusiastic, zealous purveyor of the Russiagate thesis, that Trump was an agent of Putin's. All the way up to 2017, he was, along with Obama, suggesting that somehow that the U.S. government, the U.S. intelligence agencies, do not cooperate with the incoming Trump administration because it's infiltrated by the Kremlin. No evidence whatsoever. But he was the purveyor of this. Remember, he said that, oh, hey, maybe we can get Michael Flynn on Logan Act violations. And then in the 2020 election, you remember, he was telling the world, there was a plot between Putin and Trump with the bounties, that somehow Russia was
the
spending
in Afghanistan.
Yeah, on the Taliban. Oh, you know, there were bounties on the heads of American soldiers. This is who Biden is. This is, you know, the worst possible person to be president. And now we have the consequence of this. When he said the other day that we will stop Trump from being president, like, he was blurting it out. He was just blurting out what he had said.
Well, George, didn't he say we'll stop the Nord Stream pipeline?
Exactly. The tone was exactly the same. The words were exactly the same. And, you know, he was essentially blurting out what was clearly true, that there was a plot within the Biden administration to stop him, come what may. And we already know that there has been cooperation with the Biden Justice Department and Alvin Bragg in New York. And, you know, now there's, you know, there's a story in the New York Times that in Georgia they're building some kind of a RICO conspiracy case against Trump. No doubt the Biden administration is involved in that. So yeah, this is a total plot within the government to stop him. I mean, it's fundamentally anti-democratic, of course.
Well, there you just took the words out of my mouth, Martin. I mean, where do elections play in this? Apparently, they don't play a role at all, okay? Because if you're not going to allow your competitors, you're not to participate, you're not allowing debate, you're not allowing dissent, then democracy is worthless. It's meaningless. It's actually an empty ritual, Mark.
It's an empty ritual, and I completely agree. It's totally worthless. But it will all come down to just this one parallel of this engagement between Trump and Biden on social media, and Trump will dominate this. And I think this is really where we're heading now. We're heading towards an election which is completely unprecedented on so many levels, but it will all be about Trump's ability, incredible ability, I have to add, to dominate the media agenda and to stop journalists writing about the humdrum minutiae of everyday boring political stories about healthcare and environment and economy, and just focus on the idiotic tweets that he puts out every 30 minutes. This is what it's going to come down to. This is what our election is going to be. And I really do think that Biden has played a bad move here. I really do think it's going to blow up in his face, because you know, even if he manages to get Trump in jail, you know, I think the reaction from American people, from a lot of swing voters, I mean, what swing voters do we have in America? Say 20%, say something like that. People who don't actually stick to one particular party. Those swing voters are going to vote again for the Republican side as a protest vote because...
But the danger is, I see your line of thinking, but the danger is they might not vote at all. That is also a possibility.
Yeah, and that could be something historical if you have a massive boycott, you know. But traditionally, in Western government, in Western politics, when you have a huge demographic of people who refuse to vote, you have something what's called a hung parliament, and then people have to work out coalitions and Plan Bs. I don't know how that works in America. I don't know how that would work.
It was designed not to allow that happen. It was intentionally designed not to happen that way. Well, let me go to George before we go to the break here. George, I mean, in these elites, they're so anxious because of the economic downturn, a great deal of it because of the sanction war against Russia and sanctions against countries all of the time. I mean, we see the dollar dominance being challenged because of sanctions. I mean, watching cable news and say, well, if there's no domination of the dollar, then we won't be able to apply sanctions. And they think that's a bad thing. Okay. They don't seem to understand is that people are leaving the dollar because sanctions are inherently bad for the US dollar. George.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that talk about an own goal. I mean, you had the United States using the dollar as a reserve currency as a method of sanctions, so that, in other words, that countries are unable to trade with what they have because of the American control of the dollar. Well, how are countries going to react? Well, we're going to conduct now international trade with using national currencies or yuan or something else, but not the dollar where the United States can just simply prevent us from doing business. And then, of course, by seizing Russia's central bank assets, something unprecedented, it wasn't even done to Hitler. Again, who's going to hold his assets in dollars or euros anymore? Because they know that they're going to seize them anytime the Americans feel like it.
Yeah, Martin, over the last news cycle or so, two undersecretaries of Treasury visited Europe threatening sanctions against their closest allies for not keeping to the sanctions against Russia. I mean, this is what they do to their friends, not their foes. 20 seconds before we go to the break.
Yeah, and that was always the myth of Biden coming into power, that supposedly Trump had terrible relations with NATO and European countries, that Biden was going to come in and repair that and fix that problem. But in fact, Biden is just as nationalistic and protectionistic as Trump, if not more so. So I think there's a real crisis looming there between, I mean, inevitably,
I have to jump in here, guys. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RP. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, let's go back to George in Budapest. I want to go back to the ideological origins of this malaise that the elites are experiencing. There's no reverse gear with these people. It's very totalistic. And what we've gotten down to, it's not really even politics in a way. It's more of a culture of, it's a purity test. Everyone has to pass a purity test, which means if you're not pure, then there's something wrong with you. You're defective, maybe even evil, and impurities need to be extinguished, demolished here. That's a very, very dangerous approach to social policy, to politics, to security. George.
I agree. It's a very divisive policy. It's a matter of somehow, you know, we, you know, the elites, we are blessed by an ideological purity, the sort of the sense that we are on the right side of history. You know, the end of history culminated in us, and everybody else is on the other side, whether domestically or internationally. But it's also a very curious phenomenon of a kind of Western supremacy, and that, you know, we have a right to rule the world, while at the same time despising everything that was vital and strong and affirming about Western civilization. So they despise, obviously, Christianity. They despise even, you know, much of the sort of the, you know, the thought that has permeated, you know, Western civilization. And they pretty much despise every leader and everyone who one had regarded as a hero of Western civilization. So it becomes a completely empty, vacuous kind of political correctness, wokeness, whatever you call, that is now the representative of Western civilization. Well, if you have nothing to offer the world, you can't go on, you know, expressing this the Western hegemonism, because it's just nothing. I mean, people are going to turn against it. I mean, there was a time in the great era of Western imperialism when people kind of admired. They may not have liked the Western imperialists, but they did admire what the West had achieved, you know, science, industry, technology, military prowess, all that. And so, you know,
and prosperity for their people.
We need to imitate them. We need to get to be like them in order to compete with them. But who admires, you know, the sort of the Western civilization of today, the Annalena Baerbock style of civilization?
You know, Martin, the thing is with this ideology, it projects a, I think, a fake morality, a quasi-morality, because there's no foundation to it. But it doesn't really even pretend to want to solve problems. It's if you think a right way and act the right way, then miraculously things will somehow get better. I'm befuddled by these people because they're not really policy-driven in the sense that it's problem-solving. Go ahead.
Yeah. We're living in an era of almost zero governance now when we talk about Western elites. You know, leaders don't lead. Political parties don't govern anymore. They just sort of tend to let everything fall into place and to carry on pumping out the false narratives. And as George pointed out, you know, there is this kind of blinded dogma now from Western governments, especially in America, but also we're seeing a lot of it in Europe, where, you know, institutions or people who represent institutions could just take the podium, talk absolute nonsense. I mean, really, the most appalling lies, which they've been trying to cultivate through a very servile press pack, which, you know, has become worse and worse in the last 10 or 15 years. Now, journalists now just don't ask difficult questions anymore. They don't probe. They don't write any abrasive or acerbic narrative. They just write up what they're really been told to write. And, you know, every now and again, you get a glimpse of this. And sometimes I fall off my chair laughing. I'm looking at my Twitter timeline every day. Just last week, for example, a Chinese journalist asked a UN spokesman about American troops in Syria. And his reply, amazingly, was there are no American troops in Syria. I mean, you can't.
But then the Chinese journalist followed up and said, but American contractors were injured in Syria.
But think about that for a while, Peter. Think about that. For him to say that, you know, he has to have the confidence of enough journalists in that press room who are going to follow up and repeat that narrative that there are no American journalists, American soldiers in Syria. You know, so we've gone past this line now of decency. You know, now media is complicit in all of these lies. And you said rightly that there seems to be a certain laissez-faire towards so many of these policies. You know, we are blinded by our own dogma. We don't know what we're doing in Ukraine. We don't know what we're doing on our own with our own economies. You know, when you look at the Ukraine war now, so many experts are predicting a kind of tipping point somewhere around the end of summer, because the ammunition on the Ukrainian side is dwindling to such a point where it's getting quite desperate. And it's quite clear that Western countries and America as well just can't keep up with production of this kit. You know, Biden, the Department of Defense just a few days ago announced $2.2 billion of new kit. When will it arrive? You're talking about 2 or 3 months, you know, and I think the pendulum now has swung away from from NATO forces towards Ukraine. And I think, you know, now there's a certain countdown. But going back to your original point, you know, how do people like Biden actually talk to people, to humble people in the street, when they ask those questions that journalists should ask, which, and the biggest one on the list for me is, how are we doing in Ukraine? Are we winning? Are we doing anything there at all?
Martin, you know, Ukraine is going to win because it's on the right side of history and it has the right ideology. I'm sorry, that's not a depiction of reality on the ground. But they seem to believe this here. You know, George, you and I on our podcast, The Gaggle, we've talked a lot about this. But I think the reason for this anxiety is the complete mediocrity of Western elites. Because you can take the prime minister of Finland and replace it with the prime minister of Belgium, and you'll get the same result, okay? Yeah. They're all the same, okay? They all repeat the same dribble, okay? That's why they're in power, okay? Because the media rallies around these figures and bolts them into power, okay? And then you have Soros foundations and all NGOs and all that. It's a racket. That's why we have such mediocre people, George.
Yeah, the question, I mean, it's they are all interchangeable. So we have the election in Italy last September. I thought, well, maybe there's a change with this Giorgia Meloni, who was, you know, said, you know, immediately before the election, oh, Mussolini's coming back. This is Mussolini in high heels. Then, given the first thing she says as soon as she's elected, hey, we, you know, I'm 100% behind Zelensky, and she immediately telephoned Zelensky. Same thing happened in Finland the other day. You know, the Finn chick, you know, otherwise known as Sanna Marin, the Finnish prime minister, she's defeated in the election. The man who replaces her, first thing he says, hey, we are 100% behind Finland, I mean, behind Ukraine. They're fighting for us.
Is it because, George, they don't want to be Orbán?
Yeah, no question. I mean, but they know who their paymasters are. You know, you do your stint. I doubt whether Sanna Marin will be coming back to be prime minister. She's going to go on to bigger things. You know, it's just a stepping stone for some international career. But what Martin said was so very interesting about how journalists now are just simply spokesmen for the people in power. And all of their hostility is directed toward ordinary people. The way they treat ordinary people is with rage and fury because they ask awkward questions. You know, somebody, you know, from the street would say, hey, why exactly are we in Ukraine? I mean, what's Ukraine done for us? What's the thing? They don't have an answer to that because the politicians are used to answering the ridiculous questions like, can we trust Putin to stick to his word? When can we be sure that Putin has been defeated and removed from power? They ask questions that politicians love to just swat away, but ordinary people aren't thinking like that. Hence, they need to be treated with utter contempt. You know, they're just vermin on the street.
Yeah. I saw a very interesting interview a few weeks ago about this whole trans activism and all that. And it was this female swimmer that is in the news right now. And she said on Tucker Carlson, she said, what is the difference between these transgender activists and blackface? And that she's an ordinary person, and that's such a great question. What is the difference? I think they're probably the same. But no, that's verboten. You can't talk like that, okay? Because it's not part of the official narrative. But the same thing. I said, what's our interest in Ukraine? Can you explain to me again why we're supplying so much weaponry and money to this government? And why are we still in Syria? All these questions are very valid, and they're man and woman on the street questions, just as George has pointed out, Martin.
Yeah, why are we in Syria? You just said, well, and it's one of the questions that journalists will never raise when they have these moments, and certainly won't be addressed by spokespersons of these institutions, is that America is stealing 100,000 barrels of oil a day from northern Syria. You know, and that particular strip of Syria, perhaps the American administration doesn't call Syria anymore. Perhaps it's got a new name for it. I don't know. You know, but we are living in a cloud cuckoo land with many of these stories. And there is this extraordinary ability to fudge over the facts and stick to what I call the perceived truth rather than the real truth. And I think that this is where we've got to now with all this wokeism that George is talking about. Of course, the global South, the rest of the world just rejects wokeism totally, as I do. It's just totally stupid. But it does have a purpose. And the purpose of wokeism is that you start to identify particular subjects and then make those subjects taboo. So, for example, in the UK, The opinion editor of the Independent newspaper, who happens to be a black lady, told me I could not write an opinion piece on black issues in the UK. Think about that. How can I not have an opinion about racism or black people in the UK? You know, you're just eliminated. And I think the same thing is going on with the American press with the Ukraine. You know, you're not allowed to write about the Nazi groups operating there because that doesn't really fit into our narrative. You know, and this disinformation that's coming from America is so old. It's been around for ever since the CIA was invented, you know, and let's not forget it was the Brits who helped the Americans get the CIA off the ground in the first place. We're quite good at disinformation going back several hundreds of years. But, you know, it's interesting that it's still going on. There's still a lot of fake news out there. And people like Trump, you know, are really a threat to the entire machinery. He could bring the whole thing.
Absolutely. And then we'll be talking about, we're going to be forced to talk about this for the next 18 months or so. Yeah. But always remember, everyone, most of the disinformation you hear, that you read, comes from the government. That's where it comes from, not from conspiracy groups. The government, and we have to react to it. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.